All right. Hey. Couple things. Thing number one is since we've been doing such a good job over the last few times that we've been together, we need to clean out this room tonight because they're going to shampoo the carpets. So after we are done with small group, okay, we need to get all the chairs stacked up and pulled out of here. The couches and the foosball, air hockey, that foosball are going to come up on this stage. Okay? What I will tell you is, okay, the foosball tables are very heavy. Please don't break them. So if you think you're tough, don't be a funny guy and end up breaking it or breaking yourself. So, what? I think, have you heard the slogan, many hands make light work? Yeah. You could wrap up a few minutes early if you need to, yes. You guys have a Bible? No couches downstairs by yourself. Everybody get a Bible? I'll tell you in a second. All right, so here's what we're going to do right now, all right? Person on the aisle, I'm going to hand you a slip of paper. Do not show it to your person sitting next to you. Okay? You've all played telephone before? All right? So, hey, this is how this is going to work. You're going to go from the inside out, and then the last person, oh, you guys didn't get one because you were on stage. These guys didn't get one. There's one, run back there, there's one on the table, that table. So you only get to say it one time. That's how telephone works. And then you say what you heard to the net. Yep, right there. Yep, grab the pen. And then come back and sit down. And then when it gets to the end, the last person is going to write down what they heard said to them. Okay? Don't show it to your friend. All right? Don't show it to your friend. Ooh, you guys are going to have a hard time. Real hard time. Well, you guys are going to go that way and then across. Okay? You guys are going to slide back there and help them.
Thank you.
Yep, you ladies are going to slide down so you're all one row. All of you. With Cole. You guys are just going to have an easier time. Maybe Kyle and Randy will help you guys. All right. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
You know what it says? All right. I don't think I need to tell you, but I need to tell you it helps if you're quiet.
What?
So whisper one time into your neighbor's ear what's on the paper. Ready, go. One time. No, you, hey, what'd you say? You gotta only get it one time.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a phrase. And then the last person is going to write down what they heard. All right. Let's start over here. What do you got?
Oh, jeez. I drank Hancock.
Okay. What do you have?
Mike drinks eggnog.
Mike drinks eggnog?
No. I drink eggnog.
Okay.
I drink eggnog.
Okay.
I drink the eggnog.
Well, you guys were together, weren't you?
No.
Okay, got it. Okay, what do you guys have? Something a dumb person did. Asa. You drink an oak? A Coke, all right. So the answer was, I drink eggnog. So kudos to you guys for passing around the right information. So you guys know what today was, right? Today was not National Eggnog Day. Today was a huge conclusion to a world-class event. I actually heard today on the radio that this particular sport is actually getting more, has been getting more streaming views on Twitch than Fortnite has been. Do you know what it is?
No.
Anybody familiar with the WCC? It's the World Chess Championship. It was an epic showdown between the two, not even the two top players, the world's number one ranked player, and the American, who is actually 18th in speed chess. There has not been an American World Chess Champion since Bobby Fischer. Magnus Carlsen, he's a Norwegian, he's the defending champ. He ends up beating the American, Fabiano Carana. Okay, it took them 12 matches to determine the winner. They played chess for 48 hours over 9 days. Did they get to take a nap? Yes. The way it works is once they get down to the tiebreaker, okay, then they only have 1 hour matches. And then if they get to the ultimate tiebreaker, which is the Armageddon round, each person only has 5 minutes of play time when they're going back and forth, and whoever is winning at the end of their 5 minutes wins. I've never played speed chess. I've never been a world-class chess player. But apparently it's a big deal. So tonight we're going to talk about playing some chess and spreading. I'm amazed at how well you guys did with your communication of the liking of the eggnog. I'm trying to do a little visual assessment. And do you know what the theme was? It was pretty much the ladies that dominated. You guys came in at the end, right? Okay. All right, so we're in 2 Samuel chapter 3. If you remember last time we were together, pre-Thanksgiving, we talked about this big shift that's happening. There was this battle Saul's dead, if you missed out on that. And we start to see the rise of Abner and Ishbosheth. We're in chapter 3, 2 Samuel. So I have to tell you, many of you know I had this tooth extracted, and my stitches are loosening up. And so if I seem to be moving my tongue weird, it's because the stitches are affecting my tongue. I tried to go into the bathroom before and pull them out. I couldn't get them out. So they're just hanging there. All right, here we go. Chapter 3. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew stronger and stronger while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. And sons were born to David at Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam of Jezreel, and his second, Chilab of Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel, and the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur, and the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital, and the sixth, Ithream of Eglah, David's wife. These were born to David at Hebron. So it's interesting, we get this bit of a break, and we're told that there's this war going on, but clearly as the war is going on, David's side is getting stronger and stronger, and so the author wants us to know about these various sons that are born to David. Now, this is not the totality of the children that are born to David while he's at Hebron. It's the firstborn men of each of his wives or his concubines. Now, his concubines are not legally wives, but they're treated as wives except for the financial compensation that a wife would typically get. Why is this important? Well, for one thing, it's showing the power that David is acquiring, but also, what we're going to start to see, as I mentioned before, there's some chess going on, and there's some dominoes that are starting to fall, and some of the players are right here in this first opening part of chapter 3. One of them is certainly Absalom. Now, Absalom is not a good guy. He never was really a good guy, and he's going to be a very bad guy for David in the future. Also, we're going to start to see how some of his wives are playing into his reign and some of the downfall of David based around his wives. As you can see, many of his wives are not actually, let's just say he didn't necessarily marry for love. He married more for strategy. So while there was a war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now remember, Abner is not Saul's son. Ishbosheth is Saul's son. Abner is his kind of first in charge. And what did Abner do last chapter? Yes, he killed Asahel, who was Joab's son, which we'll get to in a little bit. So Abner is making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, and Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head of Judah? To this day I keep showing steadfast love to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers, and to his friends, and have not given you into the hand of David, and you charge me today with the fault concerning a woman. God, do so to Abner, and more also if I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan to Beersheba." And Ishbosheth could not answer Abner, in other words, because he feared him. You know, sometimes people tend to say things that might not actually be true. You know, that was, I clearly did not make this game hard enough. When you play telephone, oftentimes the original message gets skewed to the end where somebody's drinking Hancock, whatever that is. Maybe it's the next best soda. But Ishbosheth Okay, Abner is Ishbosheth's right-hand man, and they were all chummy-chummy, and Ishbosheth is told by somebody else who tells somebody else that Abner is actually against the house of Saul. Have you ever been falsely accused of something? You're like, I didn't do that. I've never done that. Well, the problem is rumors tend to spread like wildfire, and the rumors continue to fester, and what is left in the wake is people's lives. And as we can see, Abner's not pleased. So he makes this, he swears before God, he immediately jumps ship. Like, clearly he wasn't that committed to the house of Saul, because he immediately says, I'm jumping ship, I'm going to go over to David, and I'm going to help David accomplish what the Lord has sworn to him. And what's Ishbosheth's, say that a few times fast, what's Ishbosheth's deal? He's immediately terrified, because he knows, maybe I shouldn't have done that, I screwed up. And rather than forgiving him, he's so terrified by him that he just lets it go. So Abner sends messages to David. One other thing that I want to mention is whenever you see this reference, Dan to Beersheba, it's like all of the land. It's okay, it's like from north to south. So that's a little sidebar. So Abner says to David, he says, I will make a covenant with you, but no one thing I require of you. I'm sorry, David is saying to Abner, one thing I require of you, that is that you shall not see my face unless you bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. Do we remember who Michal is?
Yep.
Michal is Saul's daughter. David gets Michal through helping Saul out, and then Michal is taken away from David, and the interesting thing is, it doesn't go well for their relationship after this, but we'll get to that in a second. David sends messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, Paltiel, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping after all the way to Baram. Then Abner said to him, go, return, and he returned. It's a very interesting thing, right? Because David is so enthralled with Michal, or it seems to be the case, but David doesn't actually love her. And the relationship between David and Michal is never the same, because as we can see in 15 and 16, her husband actually loves her, and he does not want to lose her, and David simply wants her because she is a pawn within the rest of his kingdom. And so don't forget this, because it's going to come back. Michael's going to come back into the story, and David and her are not going to have a very good exchange. So Abner confers with the elders from Israel, and he's like, we're going to do this. We're going to bring these people together by the hand of the servant David. I will save my people, Israel, from the hand of the Philistines. Abner also spoke to Benjamin, who's also a leader, and then Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do. What is Abner trying to do? He is trying to make himself known to David as if he is the one who's doing all of these amazing things, when in reality, God is the one who is doing these amazing things. When Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron, David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, I will rise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king. You're like, wait a second. We haven't even gotten to a new chapter, and you were against me, and now you're for me. So what has caused the change of heart? Abner said to David, okay, I'm going to make this covenant with you. And David's like, sweet. So he sends him away. Good idea? He just had seemingly his enemy come into his presence, make these claims, and then he sends him away. So the servants of David arrived with Joab. Remember who Joab is? He's the brother of Asahel, yes. So Abner is the guy who kills Joab's brother, and Joab finds out, excuse me? The guy who killed my brother was just here, and how is this? Abner the son of Ner, we're in verse 23, came to the king, and he has let him go, and he has gone in peace. Then Joab went to the king, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you, why is it that you have sent him away? So that he is gone. You know that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you and to know you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you are doing. How well do you trust people? So you meet somebody, you become new friends with somebody, and somebody says, do you really know who those people are? Have you heard about these people? So when I was living in New Mexico, running this camp, in the fall we didn't really have anything to do because camp was shut down, and so in the evenings they had fall softball. Because in the summertime in New Mexico, it's blazing hot, and you don't play softball in the summertime, you play it in the fall. So some guys from the swimming pool, small town, not much to do, so we'd go to the swimming pool. And this guy from the swimming pool said, hey, if you want to play softball, we got a team going on. And so I'm like, sounds great. And so me and another guy, Bubs, joined the softball team. And I'm also coaching football at the middle school at the time. And we start playing softball, and I'm like, man, these are some interesting dudes. But after all, we live in truth or consequences. So if you live in truth or consequences, chances are you could be an interesting dude. And as I'm coaching football, some of the parents see me playing softball with the interesting dudes, and they confront one of the other coaches and say, so the guy that's coaching my son is also friends with these other guys who are known drug dealers and not necessarily the nicest guys. I had no idea. And they're like, yeah, of course, he runs the Christian camp out at the lake. But sometimes we aren't exactly sure about people's motives, and we start to question them, and we say, oh, are you who I really think you are? And Joab has such a vendetta against Abner, with good reason, but he tells David, who is clearly trusting of him, the only reason that Abner came to you was to deceive you. But there doesn't seem to be any evidence that that was why Abner came. Why does Abner come to see David? Because he's been offended by Ishbosheth, and he's like, he sees the writing on the wall, and he is seeing the changing of the tide. You know, the writing on the wall is actually a biblical idiom. That's a little Bible baffle trivia for you, for those of you who like to play that when you're driving to school or to the bus. So, Joab is extremely upset. So what does he do? After he leaves David, he goes and kills him. Joab leaves, he goes to Abner's house, and he kills him. When David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his fathers, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has just discharged or who is leprous or who holds a spindle or who falls by the sword or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the Battle of Gibeon. Well, the interesting thing is, when other people have killed other people, what does David do? He kills them. So why does Joab get a pass? Well, it was a bit of a political move, and he doesn't want to upset the apple cart within Israel just quite yet, and so he sends this curse on them. So David says to Joab, tear your clothes and put on sackcloth, because David is upset. And the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king lamented for Abner, saying, "Should Abner die as a fool dies, your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered, as one falls before the wicked, you have fallen." And all the people wept over them. Then all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was yet today. But David swore, saying, "God, do so to me, and more also, if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down." Remember when Saul and Jonathan die, David mourns and he weeps. David, okay, this is a really fast-moving story. Abner's against David. Abner comes to David. David and Abner strike up this friendship. Abner gets killed, and David is extremely upset about it. He has this big mourning thing. Because the loss of this life is a big thing to David. And David is a sensitive guy. And it's okay to be a sensitive guy or gal. Tori's laughing already. Because as my kids once quoted, "Dad, you cried at Toy Story." Yeah. Sad movie. Especially Toy Story 3 when Andy goes off to college. The saddest part is they're making a Toy Story 4. No. It's going to be Andy's kids, and we're just going to retread this whole thing all over again. So make it a new movie. Like, come on. That's what's really sad. And yet, okay, I'm going to go see Creed 2, and the retreading of Rocky never gets old. So David is this sensitive guy, and when somebody is close to him who didn't need to die, he becomes upset. "Dad, you know this is a movie." "Yes, but it's still sad." So Ishbosheth, Saul's son, heard that Abner had died at Hebron. His courage failed, and all Israel was dismayed. Now Saul's son had two men who were captains of raiding bands. The name of the one was Baanah, and the name of the other Rechab, son of Rimmon, a man of Benjamin from Beeroth. For Beeroth also is counted part of Benjamin. The Beerothites fled Gideon and have been sojourners there to this day. So that's Saul's one son. We've been talking about him, Ishbosheth. Then we have this little pause, and we talk about Jonathan's son. Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled, and as she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Again, we're getting introduced to these characters that when Amanda teaches, I believe it's in 2 weeks, we're going to find out more about Mephibosheth. But why is Mephibosheth interjected here? It's because there's two sons left who have a right to Saul's throne, Ishbosheth and Mephibosheth. But Mephibosheth is not seemingly capable of running the throne in this context because he is crippled. So hold on to that name. We're going to come back to him. We're also going to come back to some other characters that we've been introduced. It's like we're laying out all these pieces, and then we're going to come back and just clear the table. Did I mention about the WCC champ, defending champ? Maybe America someday will have another Bobby Fischer. Now the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, Rechab and Baanah, or Baanah, set out, and about the heat of the day, they came to the house of Ishbosheth as he was taking his noonday rest, and they came into the midst of the house as if to get wheat, and they killed him. Like, did I mention that the peak of David's career has now started to seemingly turn, and we're starting to see all of these chess pieces get knocked out? So, in essence, Saul's kingdom just had a checkmate because Ishbosheth is no longer in the picture. And what do? In classic Israelite fashion, verse 8, they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron, and they said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy who sought your life. The Lord has avenged my lord, the king, this day on Saul and on his offspring." But David answered Rechab and Baana, his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life out of every adversity, one told me," man, I'm having a hard time reading, "behold, Saul is dead, and thought he was bringing me good news. I seized him and killed him at Ziklag, which was the reward I gave him for his news. How much more, when wicked men have killed a righteous man in his own house, on his bed, shall I not now require his blood at your hand and destroy you from the earth?" See, we have different people looking at the same situation and seeing two clearly different things. David looks at Saul, and he sees a king who's been placed by God who should be revered. And these other two Yehus, what do they see? They look at Ishbosheth, and what do they see? They see an opportunity to take advantage of and try and get close to the king. And David's response is, "You guys are morons." Because so often there's this domino effect, and we try to gather position or authority, or we try to do things with the wrong lens. And clearly, these two guys were seeing a worldly perspective of who Ishbosheth was. And David says, there is absolutely no reason why you should have killed these two men. And David commanded his young men, and they killed them and cut off their hands and feet and hanged them beside the pool at Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner at Hebron. So we started out chapter 3 with this list of David's multiple wives, concubines, and almost this little highlight of the fact that David is a very flawed man. And David thinks that he is doing everything that he's supposed to be doing, but some of the things that he's doing are not from God. And yet God is using this individual, David, with all of his flaws and all of his warts and all of the bad decisions that David makes, and God continues to use him powerfully throughout the nation of Israel, and we're going to see him make other mistakes, and God is going to redeem him, and God is going to take care of him. But right now, we're just sliding some pieces around on the puzzle board or on the chessboard. And we see that David is a man not only after God's own heart, but David is a man who truly cares for his enemies and for the people who are closest to him. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we come tonight and we look at this passage and we look at David's life and we look at the decisions that he made. And yeah, not all of them are perfect and not all of them are great. But we see his wisdom and his ability to see through the rumors that exist all around him as people try and position themselves to be in power. And he continues to look for the best in people and he continues to look for you. And he is sensitive not only to you, but also to the people. We just pray that you would be with us tonight as we discuss this passage, as we discuss these chapters, that we may be sensitive to each other, and that we may be sensitive to you, and that we may see people as you would desire us to see them, and not as the world or the rumor mills of this world tell us to see them. In Jesus' name, amen. Grab some more Rice Krispie treats before they're gone.